the hardest to know that for everything you've learned, it really is about learning to learn or learning to unlearn along the way. That's the hardest skill to find. Someone that gets that or embraces it or knows what that feels like.
You're listening to Learning Leader Spotlight, interviews with corporate L&D leaders. On each episode, we sit down with key industry experts to discover more about what's happening in the world of learning and development, from current trends and insights to the most valuable lessons learned along the way. Join us for a fresh perspective on all things training and the best direction forward.
Welcome to the Learning Leader Spotlight, where we interview the learning leaders of today to help the learning leaders of tomorrow. I'm your guest host, Lori Thanscher, and I am a relationship manager with Training Pros, the sponsor of this podcast. At Training Pros, we are a learning and development contract staffing company. We like to say, when you have more projects than people, let us help find the best consultant, start your project with competence. So my special guest today is Jennifer Budveit, and Jennifer is the Senior Director of Learning at PVH. She's going to share her insights on the L&D field, her background in L&D, and she hopes that you walk away with a lot of great wisdom from this session. Welcome, Jennifer.
Well, thank you, Lori. I'm so glad to be here.
We are too. We'd love that you joined us today. Can you give us a little bit of background on how you came into the L&D space and what you are doing today?
Sure. So I am honored to be currently the Senior Director of Global Talent Development at PVH. So if you don't know what PVH stands for, it's okay. A lot of people don't. It is the group that owns Calvin Klein and Tommy Hilfiger. Being part of talent development within PVH, we are part of our Global Talent Center of Excellence. I like to think of it as a center of expertise versus excellence. And in this role, I'm overseeing leadership development globally. So specifically, I am building a globally consistent leadership development strategy, which PVH has actually never had in its history. And more on that a little bit later. I'm sure we'll get into that. But I've been in the L&D, HR, talent, leadership development space for over 25 years. I'm dating myself now a little bit, but mainly in global matrixed organizations across multiple of industries. We've spent a lot of time in global logistics, in software development, healthcare. Most recently before PVH, I was the head of learning and development at Tiffany & Co. So luxury jewelry and now lifestyle fashion. The tagline that I like to use about what I do, because many people will ask, not knowing or being from the L&D space, is that I like to help bridge the gap between current and future performance through skill building. And that skill building is equal parts what you need to do and how you need to do it. And my passion is focusing on the how you show up with others professionally, personally, consumers, colleagues, peers, teams, the board, whoever that is.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like you are in a fun industry, always changing.
Always changing. Yeah. I've always loved being able to have my expertise in a common space, but that space be applied across all industries because learning happens everywhere.
Absolutely. Speaking of learning, what first attracted you to the field of L&D?
Yeah. So to answer that question, I'm going to actually go back a bit and share that I shared how long I've been in this industry, but that is actually my second career. My first career was being a professional ballerina. So I was on stage starting at age two. It truly is my first love. I come from a dancing family. My mother is 72 and still teaching ballet to this day. I really did think throughout my upbringing that a ballerina was what I was going to do. And then I hit a point when I was in college and I was majoring in business because I was dancing professionally and majoring in business for whatever would be career number two, because kind of always need plans for a career number two when you're a ballerina. And I hit this point where it was a drop more work and a drop less love. And I now know that was because the learning had slowed down. I knew the parts. I performed the Sugar Plum Fairy. I did things. Hindsight, of course, makes things very clear. So hindsight has taught me that it was my love for continuous learning that was born there. And so when I started in my first corporate role, so the beginning of career number two, I really was intrigued by all things learning. I didn't even know corporate learning was a thing, really. And through the head of learning and development at that organization, I learned about a role being an instructional designer. And no, I had no idea what even an instructional designer was at the time, but I was curious about it and went into it. And that's where I found my love for this field. So I'd say that my love for continuous learning, coupled by seeing the light bulb moments when people are consuming that learning, when they have that aha moment, is what's attracted me to the field. It's what has kept me in the field for so long. It's that light bulb moment, that aha that people get, that I get so energized by, that it has fueled me to become an executive coach along the way. And it's what I was saying before, that every organization, every industry needs to help their people learn. And so it's become fascinating to me to see what the similarities are, what the differences are across industry, and mainly the similarities. Because really, at the end of the day, employees at every level, at every organization, are human and individuals first. So that's the constant. And so seeing how you can take those learnings, how you show up and apply it in so many different ways, is what has kept that love for continuous learning fueled throughout all of this time.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that, Jennifer. That's definitely a first. I don't know anyone who is on a path as a professional ballerina. I'm truly inspired by that too.
Yeah, it's become over the years a little bit of a party trick, I'll say. Like, how can I compare the professional ballerina learnings or insights to whatever it is I'm doing today? My first corporate role was in global logistics. So trying to explain to a bunch of people that do international import and export that I'm a ballerina turned freight forwarder, it always like stumped people. And I now know that I stopped that career at the exact right moment, you know, that it is always love of mine. I run dance programs for local YMCAs over the time, and it's my daughter's first dance teacher. So it is absolutely a love, and I'm always honored that that's part of my history.
Awesome. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. So 25 years. Yeah. What are the most impactful changes that you've seen in our space, in the L&D space, in, let's say, the last few of those years?
Yeah, I've seen a lot for sure, but I would say that I could narrow it down to two in the last few years, with those two being hybrid learning and the prominence of asking the question, what is the impact? And so with hybrid learning, learning things online or virtual, that actually started way before COVID and a global pandemic. I actually did my master's degree. My master's is in organizational development and workplace learning. And I obtained that master's through Boise State University. But I did it fully online. And I did it between 2008 and 2012. We've come a long way since then. But COVID definitely ripped the Band-Aid off from the skeptics, because there really was no other option. So it now being part of accepted practices in any organization to learn virtually, and that doesn't mean solely e-learning or on-demand. It means virtually facilitated and how you make people engaged, that it's not just lecture, but it's interactive. We're doing this podcast from two totally different places. And we're engaging and interacting. So I think that has greatly accelerated how people can consume learning and their access to it along the way. With my point about what is the impact, you know, more and more business leaders are really pushing back on our industry to stop talking about learning in terms of objectives and competencies, all of our quote unquote learning speak, but really in terms of what's the impact and value, because I don't have time and I don't have the luxury of letting it just figure itself out. I've been laser focused on this for the majority of my career, that in order for L&D to have a strategic seat at the table means talking in business terms with the C-suite, if you will, not in L&D terms. Other support functions do that. You don't see the legal team expecting the executives and organization to learn all their lawyer speak. But L&D somehow lagged in that area. But now it is expected that in L&D and L&D professionals, we will design, develop, deploy, facilitate with agility, adapt and pivot, and measure the solutions being introduced to the organization. And that really should be our role. And the expectation of L&D leaders to be able to sit across from the executive team and confidently talk about how that solution has translated into helping the business move forward. Because if you can't, then they will walk away with the answer that didn't. It means being comfortable with saying what's worked and what hasn't. And that if it hasn't worked, why are we doing it? And that is something that I think L&D has been, you know, resistant to. We want to say that the solution just works. But we know that's not reality. Business in the world is changing too fast. We need to know what's worked and what hasn't. And as a result, what we're going to do differently next time.
Absolutely. I love that. The seat at the table and the consultative approach to the work that we do. Really getting into the business and how we're contributing to the business needs. Yeah, thank you for sharing that.
I always like to say with the teams that I manage or, you know, in the spaces that I'm in organizations, that it's our job to know all the academics and all the models and the objectives and the competency. That's our job. And it's our job to make sure that our consumers, our employees, our leaders, the executive team, that they never do. And so if that's what we're aiming to do in our learning solutions, then we also have to be doing that in our narrative on what was the impact and value. And if we can't proactively answer that question, then we've lost the game.
Right. So true. So where do you see the L&D space headed over the next 5 to 10 years then?
You know, I think that there's always been this balance between internal L&D teams and the consultant vendor route. And if an org really wants to see behavior change and business impact, then what does that mean? It means that they cannot solely buy off the shelf. And gone are the days where any L&D team is going to be given the headcount to fully build internally end to end with the speed and agility that organizations need. So I think it is more about accepting that moving forward is a blend. It's a customized buy and build model. That means that for the consultant and the vendors, gone are the days where you can say, tell me what your org is focused on for the next 2 years and we'll build it for you. That's not going to work because nobody's got 2 years. And 2 years from now, they're going to be working on different things. And gone are the days of, here is my strategy and I'm going to take the next year to build this one program. Nobody has time for that. And there is no impact and value that a business is going to see. So I think that organizations and L&D leaders internal to those organizations really need to be strategic. They need to, when they buy, they have to be able to roll up their sleeves and work on customizing that content to make it applicable to the organization. And they need to know what needs to be built internally. And be able to explain that. Like, what is the business case? Why are we going external for this and internal for that? And L&D leaders know that, But again, it's about translating it to talking about it in terms of the business case. So with the increase of that proactive question of impact and value, you know, really stating this from the get-go is going to be the demand of L&D leaders and teams more and more, I think.
Yeah. So taking those things that are knowing and understanding those things that you can purchase off the shelf, when and where that's appropriate, and also knowing when and where it's most appropriate to build it in-house, and then where's the blend?
Yeah, at the end of the day, I firmly believe that when you're an employee in an organization, you don't care where the things come from. You want and need to know that that organization is setting you up for success to do what it is you are hired to do and to demonstrate how you're showing up in a way that's consistent with the culture and the values of that said organization. So if you are going to consume learning internal to that organization, you want to know that it's all, in my case, it's all PBH. You don't care that this is with the vendor and this is internal. You want that to be a consistent experience. And organizations want a globally consistent definition of what great looks like. And so that means you can't have language of one vendor one day and then language of another vendor another day, because you're not setting up your employees to be L&D experts. You're setting them up to be the most effective at their role today and setting them up for their future role tomorrow in your organization. So you can't just pass them off to the vendor here and then pass them off to this experience there. It needs to be that vendor's experience customized for what it means for your organization. So you're showing them from the learning moment how to apply what they're learning.
Wow, so true. Thank you for sharing that. Yes, customizing and making sure it aligns. So important.
This episode is brought to you by Training Pros, the award-winning contract staffing agency that works exclusively with learning and development professionals to match the right consultants to client projects. If you're in corporate L&D and have more projects than people, let the industry practitioners at Training Pros provide you with the right L&D consultant to start your project with confidence. Find out how we make finding quality consultants easy by scheduling a consultation at www.trainingpros.com.
Jennifer, who has been your most influential professional mentor in your career?
You know, I knew this question was coming, I'll be totally honest with you. And it's always a hard one to answer because I've been very fortunate to have quite a few influential mentors. And for me, the mentors are influential when it helps me shape part of my story or shape part of my why that I do this and stay in this work for as long. So I think I'll slightly adjust your question if you let me and highlight three that have stood out to me and that are really important to me. One is one of my first colleagues in the learning and development space who really taught me that to truly be an L&D professional, what is my job and what it's not. And what I mean by that is that he explained to me that it's my job to bring my L&D expertise to the conversation. And it's the person I'm meeting with whose job it is to bring their expertise on whatever they think they're quote unquote looking for training on. And that advice has shaped my insights around not being an order taker. Just because they're asking for training doesn't mean that they know that's what's needed. And in order to be a true L&D leader, means to be a true consultant with all stakeholders. And it needs to be, in order to get to the right L&D solution, it needs to be a blend of their expertise and mine, and not one or the other. So a second mentor that I will mention is one of my very first managers. And he gave me this amazing piece of advice, actually by email, and I could probably still find the printout of that email today. And all he said in the email was, we don't live to work, we work to live. And it was sent to me at a very hard time for me. I was about to go on one of my first business trips at this organization, and it was an international trip. I was super excited, but we had a sudden death in the family, and so I couldn't go. And I was nervous about what to do, and literally that's what beset me. But over time, that statement has helped shape my views on work-life balance. Before that was, and it was sent to me at a time that wasn't even part of everyday language, but it's something I've always held on to. And for me, it's not work-life balance or a blend. It really is just all life. And we cannot do, there's no way we can be 100% in all the different areas of our life on any given day. That's not attainable. But if we're able to lay our head on the pillow at night and know that I gave 100% of myself to the things that were important to me on that day, then it was worthwhile. One other one, so I could go on and on, obviously, but I won't, is one of my best managers over my career really helped me see the true value and power of shifting my mindset about myself. I have been told for many years that I can just get too emotional, as many women leaders have been told in their career too many times to count. But that doesn't mean I'm too emotional as a bad thing. I could translate that to be that what is actually the case, that I am truly passionate about the work I do. And that same manager who's turned mentor and dear friend of mine to this day has helped me see that I'm capable of owning what I want out of a career, and that I need to share that with others because no one's going to read my mind. I need to advocate for myself. I need to share what's important to me. I need to share what's working and what's not along the way in order for me to be my best self, no matter which organization I'm working for.
And it's wonderful how you still have these three people and their words of wisdom at the forefront, driving you every day. I think that's fantastic that you had the opportunity to be with them and meet with them and have that encouragement.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I'm fortunate here. I oversee mentoring here at PVH. And so I get to now be a mentor. I still leverage my mentors along the way. And, you know, a mentoring relationship could be as simple as one sentence of an email. It could be something that, you know, that last person I mentioned, I can text her at any time, say, hey, I need a conversation. And, you know, someone I know that I can rely on and ask questions of, or be like, I don't know what to do next. I need help, you know? And so some are for a short period of time, some are for your entire career, but they're all impactful.
That is cool that you circled around and back to, you're also providing mentorship now in a large company based on what we're lucky to have you do that. We've talked about so many different aspects of L&D with your answers so far. And I'm just curious, what skill or role do you find it hardest for when you're looking for talent within your team? What skill or role is the hardest to find right now?
You know, I think it's honestly not to, you know, this is going to sound like I'm doubling down on this, but it's that skill of continuous learning. Gone are the days where the definition of an expert or a subject matter expert is being a person who knows everything there is to know about something, because that's not attainable either, because the overload of information is too much. So instead, it's, if you think about someone who you consider an expert in any sort of space, chances are that person knows what they know and knows what they don't know. And for what they don't know, they know who to go to ask the questions for. So what you know today, what is your best practice or what works for you today, probably won't work for you 2 years from now, 6 months from now. Who knows? I know that what worked for me in the past doesn't work for me today. And so the idea of, you know, college or universities, they are meant to do just that. I have a 19 and a 22-year-old. My 22-year-old knew what he wanted to do from grade school, and he has followed through with that. And that's great, but that's also the exception. my 19-year-old is figuring it out. And we all say as parents that, well, you're not meant to know what it is you want to do when you just start college. But yet college is kind of set up with, you need to pick a major and learn everything there is to know about that major. And none of those things are really realistic. So it's having people join the workforce or join, you know, start in a role, knowing that you don't know everything there is to know. So that means that you need to be able to ask questions, to be okay to get feedback, to get input from other people. And that sounds good in theory, but is really hard in the moment. We all know that. We all can experience that. And so I think that it's the hardest to know that for everything you've learned, it really is about learning to learn or learning to unlearn along the way. That's the hardest skill to find, someone that gets that or embraces it or knows what that feels like.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I've got kids too, who are, you know, a couple of them found college and a couple of them didn't find college, but that ability to be motivated and be brave and be vulnerable to some extent to say, I don't know, and that out along the way. That's wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to see in school teachers and, you know, from grade school on up through college, really address that. And most don't, you know, those three word sentences, I am sorry, I made a mistake, I don't know. Those are some of the hardest sentences for an individual to say. But yet we all are okay when someone says it to us. And it takes vulnerability, it takes trust, it takes accountability. Just because I don't know the answer to this doesn't mean I'm not good in my job. And we judge ourselves and we sabotage ourselves so much that we get in our own way.
I think that's the gift we give as L&D professionals to those learners who participate in any of the learning that we've made available to them, is that.
Yeah, totally agree.
So what is your favorite source for industry news and information about our field?
I'm smiling because you're going to laugh at me. But for someone that now has truly embraced that I am a continuous learner and I love to learn for the sake of learning, not only learn it when I need to do something with it, for me, that really is reminding myself that I'm open to learning from anywhere. And I could list off to you the things I've learned from TikTok straight through to industry news, like reading The Business of Fashion, which is a publication and a website specifically for the fashion industry. Anything to increase my business acumen, because as an L&D professional, I bring my expertise and I definitely like to balance learning more about what's latest and greatest in our field and whatever is the industry that I'm working in, because you need to have knowledge of both. But yeah, I'll learn from anywhere, but I really get most engaged and energized by learning from others. I am very much extroverted and love talking with people. And so for me, it is actively prioritizing, balancing internal focus. We can get so bogged down with the work and the scope and what we're doing that it may not feel like we have the time to go to the networking dinner or the conference or the one day, you know, thought leader event, whatever it is. But really making sure that I prioritize doing something a couple of times a year is where I can ensure that I'm staying current on the latest and greatest in our industry. Because if we are L&D professionals in an organization, we're not surrounded by hundreds and hundreds of people that have the same expertise. So we've got to go talk to our people elsewhere. But for me, that also means paying it forward. I know that I'm extremely fortunate and blessed to be in the L&D field for as long as I have. And so if I want to get things from the L&D universe, that means I also need to put stuff into it. And so it is doing things like this podcast that I'm so honored to be part of today. I was just part of a panel with the Neuro Leadership Institute earlier this week. And so I do try to balance the two. So sharing and paying it forward and also going and listening and attending as well.
Thank you for that answer. I mean, that was just wonderful. So getting most of your information from others in our field and finding ways to do that. And then also remembering to give back as well. I've seen you lead discovery sessions and conferences, and I know that's just part of who you are. So thank you for that. What is the one book that everyone who wants to go into L&D leadership or is currently in L&D leadership, what's the one book that you think they must read?
Oh, there have been so many books that I've been introduced to. My kids look at me as very old school because literally over here in my office are bookshelves of the books. You know, who does that anymore, Mom? But I greatly refer to them. You know, for specifically L&D leadership, one that I would recommend, because I don't know that there is just one book, but one I would recommend is Turn the Ship Around. And it's by David Marquette. He is from the military, so it is a little bit about U.S. military, but it's not about the, you know, the philosophies of the military. It's about how he was able to literally and figuratively turn his ship around. The premise of the book is that to be a captain of a naval ship, it was expected that you study for a year, 2 years, to learn every nuance of that boat. So then that way you can go in and tell everyone else what to do. So in our field, very much command and control. And that's what was expected. And so he was doing that. And 2 weeks before, maybe I'm getting the timing wrong, but he was asked to not go to the ship he had been planning for, but to go to a new ship that he knew nothing about. And well, there was no time for him to do what was expected of him. So he first went in and tried to fake it, and that didn't go well because he didn't know. And every boat is very different, I've learned from reading this book. So the book talks about his trials and tribulations with doing that and how I have to take a different approach because this is never going to work. I don't know what to do on this boat. The people that are working on the boat do. So he was able to turn the ship around because he had to let go of him as a leader is the person who knows it all. And he had to instead set up a understanding with the people that were essentially reporting to him, where he needed to be the decision maker, but he needed to rely on their expertise. So he instilled this thing of, I intend to. And so he would have the people that were coming to him that thought they should be asking what should they do, and instead say, here's the situation, I intend to do this. So he had the ability to weigh in. Oh, wait, no, don't do that. Bad. Or, oh, that is good. And what about this additional step? But it allowed the people doing the job, which is not him. It wasn't his job to do the job. It was to enable the others to do it, to say what they thought they should do. And many times it was not what he would come up with on his own. And so I think that in L&D leadership, we grow up. I grew up as an instructional designer. It was a hard lesson for me to learn that someone else is going to design that learning or that content differently than me. And that doesn't mean it's wrong. In many ways, it's going to be better. But if I want to embrace my role as an L&D leader, it's my job to enable them to do it, not to just be replicas of me. And so I needed to move from being a doer to an enabler. And so I leverage that. What is it you intend to do? What would you do here? What are you thinking? Show me your thoughts, and then we'll collaborate together.
I love it. Well, it's just packed full of leadership lessons, isn't it?
Oh, it's so many. I mean, I've had the honor. I've had him come to organizations where we were reading that book and talk about it. I've been able to, you know, hear him speak. It really is fascinating. And, you know, again, you can learn lessons and insights from anywhere. And whenever you can take those nuggets and apply those, then it was a strong insight.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you for sharing that. I'm going to have to pick that up. I love the answers to that question because there's so many different wonderful books out there for us. So thank you so much for appearing on our show today, Jennifer. This packed full of wisdom and insights for everyone in our space. So thank you.
Thank you so much. I've been a fan of yours for so long. And we, like you said, we first met at a conference and have stayed in touch. And I always value the building your network and getting to engage with people in so many different ways. And so I'm so glad we were able to make this happen. And thank you so much for inviting me on the podcast.
Of course. So in an expression of our gratitude for your participation today, we would like to plant 5 trees in your name.
Oh, thank you.
Awesome. So Training Pros company charity is World Reforestation. So to date, we've planted over 3,500 trees.
Oh my goodness.
For consultants and clients that we work with. And so it's a big focus area for us. It's just our way of to let you know that we are grateful for your participation in our as our guest today.
Oh, well, thank you. Oh, that is awesome. I love that.
Awesome. Well, thank you for joining us for this episode of Learning Leader Spotlight.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for the latest episode of Learning Leader Spotlight, interviews with corporate L&D leaders. You'll find links in the show notes to any resources mentioned on today's show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you never miss an episode and leave us a 5-star review.